You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
Cleveland! This is for you!
Evan, what's up, buddy? Why don't you introduce our wonderful guest?
I'm great. And ladies and gentlemen, let's give it up for somebody who we need to give it up for. So, ladies and gentlemen, once again, give it up for somebody we need to give it up for. Chris, I hope you're giving it up for the one, the only, the most handsome man on Cavs Twitter, and I mean this genuinely, Jeff. I know you're married, but still flirting. Jeff Nomina. Jeff, how are you today?
I feel like, while I appreciate the compliment, the competition is just not that high. You know, I don't know how much, I don't know how proud of this honor I can be, but I still appreciate it. Thank you.
No,
I think it was born when we interviewed you in the arena for something. I think we were talking about Kobe with you, wasn't it? And
yes,
Chris just called you incredibly handsome. I'm like, yeah, no, Jeff's pretty handsome. And then like the consensus across like all of our colleagues was like, yeah, no, Jeff, you're super handsome.
I feel like you're setting me up for people to be really disappointed when they see me and they realize I'm just like a middle-aged bald guy, and you're talking me up this much.
Okay, Jeff, here's the thing, though. You have really... We saw you on camera here for a second. Your glasses, A+. Like, really strong frames. Like, really, really stylish. Good stuff.
Cool glasses. Let's be honest. They go a long way. Cool glasses.
Oh, 100%. They're key. They're a key part of the look if you're a glasses person. Number two, also just, you know, a very good human being and engaged on the Twitters. And, you know, that counts for something about making Twitter a slightly less terrible place. But, Jeff, I'm going to ask you a question. Last time you came on, you were like, you caught me off guard with the folklore question. I'm going to ask you a kind of catch you off guard question here.
Well, first off, how dare you for hating folklore? Continue, Chris.
I like folklore. I'm all about it. I'm all about it.
Totally Jeff is folklore.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Have you listened to what I would describe as like folklore for people who haven't gone to therapy, aka Punisher by Phoebe Bridgers?
No. Do I need to do this?
I think it is the best album of 2020.
Okay, I'm gonna throw it on after this.
It's
like, every peak, couple months we'll just figure out what the new album is, but we're gonna argue about.
It's all really good. Kyoto is an absolute like banger. Kyoto is I think the third song on the album, and it's just like holy shit. Great. She's great.
All right. I'm gonna load up on Spotify. I'm gonna hit download right after this.
Yeah, Punisher, Phoebe Bridgers, incredible. Her whole discography is really, really good. But she's a great Twitter presence as well. She's also one of the few people that is great at Twitter, but she's great. Highly, highly recommend.
What am I, chopped liver?
Evan, you're
what is Jeff? Chopped liver?
You guys are both pretty great.
Thank you.
The first bit we're going to do here on today's show is Jeff is going to later on steer us through some questions. But Jeff, when we were having you talking about coming on, we were like, you're like, what are we going to talk about? Well, one of the things is you are a Dolphins fan, you are a Cavs fan, and you are a Cleveland baseball team fan. Now, I'm lumping this last one in here just because I feel like I should. But if you had to pick between your prized children on your different teams, so Tua in Miami, KPJ, I think, in Cleveland would be fair to say. And then whomever you want to pick with the Cleveland baseball team. I don't really know how you, like, pick that because it's, like, this weird situation because of everything going on with that team. And you know, like, they're kind of built in a way to, like, where Lindor's obviously going to be gone at some point, et cetera. Who's, like, your pick? If you had to pick one as kind of your top child, who would you pick?
Well, you know, two would be the easy one because the star quarterback is the coolest, right? But I feel like I've also had my heart broken. Like, being a Dolphins fan is just mired in so much mediocrity. And I say this, like, Browns fans don't realize how lucky they've been that the team is always entertaining. Sure, there's not a lot of winning, but you guys normally know if your quarterback sucks within, like, a year or two, right? Like, I had, like, what, 7 years of Tannehill or something like that? Like,
well,
so much of my
life. As Browns fans, we have to say, like, I think Baker sucks, but the jury still believes Baker.
The numbers of early season Baker are like pretty encouraging.
If I say anything bad about the Browns, David Zabek, text me incessantly.
David is already just like in full, like, people are disrespecting Miles Garrett.
He's hate
6 years
right
from
now.
Yeah.
The good thing is he doesn't listen to podcasts, so he'll never know that this is happening. No, so I guess this is my chance to talk trash about Baker. But so, you know, Tua, I'm just not ready to go there yet. I love Jose Ramirez. He's like a cartoon character. But, yeah, you know, KPJ, he's just – I was watching somebody put together that highlight video that was going around Twitter earlier today, and it was all – I love how he does these little hesitation moves. And when he gets a guy kind of like – he gets him off step, he like stops for a second just to like look at them. But it's like he gets somebody a little bit off balance and he knows it, and he almost just like stops like, all right, like this is bad for you now. And then he goes into another move. It's wonderful. I love watching him. I just – he's wonderful in every way.
No, as someone who Jeff and I bounce texts off each other now, because when I took my Twitter break, Jeff was so gracious enough to give me his number, and then we just spit hypothetical Cavs trades with each other. But I feel like from our kinship that came through Cavs Twitter, I feel like I'm a closet Dolphins fan. I want to ask you what your folklore is as a Dolphins fan for our fans listening, but we'll get to that in a second. The pun was intended there, but... I'd agree with you with KPJ. Until I see Tua play, like, Tua was a lot of fun at Alabama. Like, this is really going to suck because I just call college sports glorified slave labor the episode prior to this. But, no, Tua was a lot of fun at Alabama. And, like, I think he is a quarterback you can get excited about because he didn't play wide receiver up until his, like, junior or senior year in college. And so, I mean, I'm sure it didn't hurt, Jeff, to watch Tannehill carry the tight – or not carry – God, I shouldn't have said that. Lead the Titans to the AFC Championship, or do you think that was just, you know, lightning in a bottle and it didn't faze you too much?
For some reason, Dolphins fans didn't seem to struggle too much. I think he was around for so long, and it just clearly wasn't going to happen in Miami. Like, you could always kind of see these flashes where you're like, all right, this guy could easily be a pretty good quarterback on a team that knew how to handle a quarterback and then be a somewhat well-run organization, but we also knew the Dolphins were never going to be that team. So it was just kind of like one of those, like, if he goes and has success somewhere else, I don't feel like it was going to happen here if he had stayed. So it didn't bother me too much. I'm going to be perfectly honest. I was actually kind of happy for him. Like, he seems like a good enough dude. He put up with a lot of junk in Miami.
He's in a really good situation, obviously. I mean, I think one of the things to kind of think about And I think it's actually kind of a fun linkage between what we're kind of talking about here is just, like, I feel like the Dolphins now with Tua, with kind of Brian Flores as the head coach, are actually, like, building, like, process over kind of just going for results. And I think the Cavs with trying to bank on someone like KPJ is kind of the same thing. I guess I just, like, wonder, maybe it's just because, like, if the Cavs are higher on your totem pole for whatever reason, like, that kind of explains it in a way, too. But Tua feels like... Like, if that guy's really good, you guys could be in the Super Bowl. Like, it's not like that. Like, he's that potentially good. And I think we're still trying to figure out, like, what the ceiling is on KPJ. And obviously, like, football is – quarterback can kind of be the engine of that. Basketball, you can get one really good guy and take you there. And I don't think KPJ's ceiling is that, but, like, who freaking knows? Like, I don't feel like I know anything. But, like, it's like with baseball, it's like that one guy. Like, Francisco Lindor is incredible, and Shane Bieber this year is, like, incredible. But it's like that one guy doesn't totally – change your structure. Like, Tua, like, 100%, like, kind of could be that kind of guy. He probably gets picked ahead of Burrow if he doesn't break his hip, you know?
Yeah, and that was the funny thing about being a Dolphins fan last year. Was they literally tanked as much as anybody ever has. I mean, it was a Sixers-style tank, right? They got rid of Tunsil and Minka and all those guys, like, young guys who were really good high picks on rookie deals who looked good. You know, they weren't just getting rid of veterans. They were getting rid of everything, all of it to get Tua. And then Tua gets hurt, and then the Dolphins win 5 games randomly. So it just all kind of felt like it wasn't meant to be. And then all of a sudden, it was meant to be again. And it was really weird and fun. So it does kind of feel like one of those, like, fate things, you know, like, after all the shenanigans. But it's also just kind of a weird situation, like, with KPJ. Like, we had clearly the Cavs wanted this guy, and they maneuvered all over and could have had him here or there and didn't. And still on the lap and paid a big price for it. So it's kind of fun that they both, you know, kind of came to your team. I think it's more fun to cheer for guys who come to your team in weird circumstances who aren't just like a top pick or somebody that you expect to be good, which is kind of, you know, even to tie it back to the baseball team, it's the Lindor and Jose Ramirez thing. Like, Lindor was the top prospect. He's always supposed to be good. So there's just kind of this weird vibe around him sometimes where it was expected, whereas somebody like Jose Ramirez kind of comes out of nowhere and has this, all this personality. It's a lot of fun.
Yes.
I do think we need to work on that with Tua, though. He needs some personality.
Football's hard, yeah, though. Football's really hard to have personality unless you have, like, 900 Hulu commercials that I see all the time.
True.
True, true, true.
Or your OBJ, who, like,
to your point, though, before we wrap up, I believe it was John Henson who I was talking to about Kevin Porter before John Henson left town. And what you said is really true, Jeff. It's for a rookie, if a team that wants you is able to obtain you, like, your prospects for your future is so much better than a team that's, like, forced to draft you. So if it's a team like the Dolphins who wanted Tua, if it's a team like the Cavs who wanted Kevin Porter, like, it's all going to work out beautifully in the end. And fingers crossed it does for all parties involved. And we have the Dolphins finally find their quarterback after, you know, searching after Dan Marino, and the Cavs finally find their small forward, you know, 2-3 years removed from LeBron James. So, hey, I'd be happy.
I won't know what to do with myself if I have that much sports success. That'd be a very confusing situation.
Competency is its own thing to, like, reckon with. I wonder if you were like a Colts Pacer, like, basically an Indianapolis fan, or like kind of, I guess, like, you could say New England, but that's, like, a little more, like, there's a little more, like, anger there and, like, higher levels of success. It's just, like, if you're competent year after year, I wonder what that's like. I don't know. I generally don't know what that is like.
I bet it seems like it would be great, but I bet it's also somewhat miserable. Like, when the Dolphins were 8-8 every year for 10 years, it was exhausting because the wins felt like, you were supposed to win, and the losses felt like the end of the world. And so you never, like, it got to the point where it wasn't really fun because you were expecting the wins and devastated by the losses, so there's no real highs. And then you pick 15th in the draft every year, which isn't exactly fun either. So it was just, there was no, like, real big peaks at any point.
Yeah. Maybe the Indians are the closest thing to that, but there's obviously something very frustrating with what they do, which you can go probably listen to in Locked On Indians. But Evan, I think we have a sponsor here for our first segment.
We sure do.
All right.
And Jeff,
didn't butcher that one.
Let me ask you, what kind of car do you drive?
Me?
Yeah, what kind of car do you drive, Jeff?
I drive a 2007 Honda Ridgeline from Butte.
Okay. So I have a 2007 Camry, so it's in the shop every now and then. I assume your Ridgeline's in the shop as well.
Quite a bit, yeah.
Well, if you take a look at our today's sponsor, rockauto.com, you could save some money while you're taking your car to the shop. Did you know that?
I did not. Tell me more.
Okay, well, chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear, like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require memberships or account login. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules to brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Check them out today at rockauto.com. Hey guys, I want to tell you about a new website that just launched on August 1st called OhioVersusEveryone.com. The site covers all Ohio sports and pop culture. They have in-depth, interesting articles about the Cavs, Browns, Indians, and even the Buckeyes and their eventual return to the Big Ten play. An article that caught Chris, myself, and Jeff's eye is "The Cavs Would Be Western Conference Champs" by Nick Grossman. It's quite a take, but if you really, really, really read it, you can understand where Nick's coming from. And you know what? I feel like I agree with it after checking it out. It's all your favorite teams, all in one site. And because they cover all the teams, they only bring you the best, most interesting topics. Check them out. Again, it's ohioversuseveryone.com. That's OhioVSEveryone.com.
All right, we're back here on Locked On Cavs. Jeff, we're going to turn the keys over to you here. Where do you want to start?
I'm going to drive the ship in the ground. I'm going to start with the Cavs have a ton of guys that need minutes, whether they're veterans who are good enough to expect the minutes or young guys who need the minutes. Is there anybody you think that might be surprising to fall out of the rotation this year or maybe not enter the rotation?
I want to say I think that the obvious answer is Dante Exum, because
that was my pick. So,
well, I'll let you take it, but I think the guy, if you're looking at someone who could at least lose minutes, I think it'd be Jetty. I think just because KPJ is on the rise, Dylan Windler's coming in, and let's say they draft Isaac Okoro, like, just logically, Jetty is going to get a reduction in minutes, which I think is probably good for him in some ways, but I think he'd be a guy that whose role could get kind of changed a little bit. And when you're just adding all these young wings and you have to kind of figure out minutes for all of them, and, you know, I would be surprised if they don't try to give Windler some minutes, and, you know, if they draft Okoro or Vassell or whomever at five, and that player is a 3-4, 2-3, 2-3-4 kind of guy, like, that guy's going to get minutes, and Jetty's kind of the one you're going to dream from, which, again, I think is actually probably good for him in terms of just maximizing what he is. But I think it's him and Dante are probably the two that pop to me.
I agree with Chris in that stance. If you really want to be, like, a smartass about it, I could say Tristan Thompson's going to lose minutes if he's not brought back in free agency. But and then Andre Drummond, if he's inevitably traded at the trade deadline, like, that's a candidate as well. But no, Dante and Jetty feel like the most logical options. I feel like it all depends, for Jetty at least, if Dylan Windler's healthy, on who the Cavs draft. If Dylan Windler's healthy, I know the Cavs held him in such high regard that they are more than willing to, like, hand the keys to the offense, not the keys to the offense, but, like, make him a meaningful piece in the Cavs rotation. Like, they viewed him as a starting caliber player when he went down with injury. So, like, they were a little shocked when he was sidelined. So, Jetty's definitely a logical candidate. And then if you jump on the draft side of things, like, Devin Vassell makes a lot of sense for the Cavs. Isaac Okoro makes a lot of sense for the Cavs. Jeff, I know you're a big Denny guy, so Denny Avia, it makes a lot of sense as well for the Cavs. Like, there are a lot of factors going against Jetty, and then Dante Exum, like, the biggest thing, and as cliche as it sounds, like, the biggest thing holding him back and is his health, and that's a position of need for the Cavs, especially if, you know, Delly doesn't come back for some reason, God willing. I feel like Cleveland's going to be the only team that offers him a contract in free agency this year. But if Dante Exum isn't healthy, the Cavs guard rotation becomes surprisingly thin. You have Darius Garland, you have Colin Sexton, and I'm drawing a blank on who else you really have. Like, you could call some G League guys at that point and kind of figure out what you have there. But it's just kind of interesting what's going on in this situation. And okay, Chris, just pick up here. I'll just talk about it. It's interesting what's going on in the situation as a whole, because the Cavs just are an awkwardly constructed team overall. Like, they have a bevy of big guys. Like, they have Larry Nance, they have Andre Drummond, they have Kevin Love on contract next year as long as Andre opts in. Tristan Thompson could come back. So, kind of eliminates Onyeka Okongwu as much as we all would like to have him in Cleveland, which is a shame. But, like, wing is such a dire need for the Cavs, but there are so many people coming back next year that it's just, there's going to be too many mouths to feed as well. Like, Dylan Windler and this draft pick will both be technically rookies next year joining Cleveland, a Cavs rotation that already had 8-9 guys when fully healthy on a consistent basis. So it's just a weird time. And Jeff, I'm going to, like, bounce it back to you now. Like, who do you think is most at risk to lose minutes in Cleveland's rotation next year? Oh, I'm leaning in. You have my curiosity and my attention. Go on.
I think, and this is something we heard last year and something that Chris Fedor was pushing again today in his article. I think it was his mailbag. They've been talking about playing KPJ at the one, like actually playing him at the one, not playing him at the two or three and letting him handle the ball. So I wonder if that would take some minutes away from somebody like Exum. You know, because there's not going to be a ton of minutes to go around there. So if they start experimenting with that, I think he could be a big one. I also think Jetty might low-key be a trade candidate. Maybe not with the way that the salary cap is going, but he's on a pretty cheap deal. Well, he's got a pretty cheap deal. He can shoot. He's what everybody wants. He's not really on the Cavs timeline. I mean, I know they're saying they want to be good, but I don't know that he is getting them anywhere in the short term. It just seems like somebody who could be really interesting for a team that wants to put together a roster that isn't short term. You know, a lot of the deadline deals and stuff are more just short term pieces, but you're looking at teams like Philly and Milwaukee who are trying to load up around guys that and need shooting and guys who can do a lot. But he seems like he makes a lot of sense for some of those squads.
I think especially if you kind of like combine his salary in a certain instance, I think that would be kind of an interesting outcome for what Jetty is. Again, I don't know like what the timeline on that would be or like kind of how that looks or anything like that. But like when you think about him, it's just like the last, and again, the last year of his contract is not guaranteed, which is like, again, crazy that his, even though he's not like a star, like that's crazy that he has it in the last year of his contract, in my opinion. I could see it. I think him and Larry Nance are two guys that I think if the Cavs were better, they would look a lot better and we would think of them a little bit differently. And if he ended up in a situation where he was like kind of like a bench wing playing 20 minutes a game, I do think Jetty looks a little bit better. I don't know exactly what the right fit for him is. I think Denver would kind of be an interesting, if he was a bench fit there, maybe. Better team, I think would be interesting. Just kind of that where his, and maybe his playmaking shows up a little bit more in a kind of a different structure. But yeah, I think Jetty's interesting, is kind of just the obvious kind of one there. And KPJ at the one remains like this very weird thing that I don't quite know what to make of it. But it's hard to like know what to make of it until we actually, I think, get some data and some tape on it.
All right, so my next one. We've been hearing a lot about, like Fedor's mentioned a lot, and I know I keep talking about Fedor, but there aren't a whole lot of Cavs coverage going on in the offseason right now. Or I guess it's not the offseason, the Cavs offseason. But if they were looking to trade the pick or if they're trying to make the playoffs, or what, do you think that there are going to be more win-now moves, or do you think a lot of this talk about wanting to be better and all this is more just kind of response to the Drummond trade, which we only saw a couple games of?
I think it's neither. I think the Cavs are migrating from being a god-awful team, you know, at the bottom feed of the NBA. I think the Cavs currently constructed, if you bring back Drummond and you bring in a draft pick and you hope that Garland, Sexton, Osmond, Nance, Porter, and Windler, quite the list there, all have had like tangible growth. Like, I know Nance has done a lot to work on his game. I know he's actually working more and more on his playmaking, love included in that regard, but that's just an interesting thing to explore there. But I think the Cavs are just kind of, I think they're not trying to say, like, I know the idea was that they were going to be a playoff team next year. I think that is still out of reach for Cleveland, but I think the mentality of having a team that believes they are good enough to contend for the eighth seed but fall short, I think that's a admirable goal for the Cavs to have next season, and I think a good position to be in because losing is a cancerous mentality. I mean, Philadelphia is a team that has done really well, but I do sometimes wonder that having them lose so much in such spectacular fashion under Brett Brown, like maybe they don't know how to win the big one. Maybe the Cavs need to go into next season thinking like, okay, we're going to try and go out and win every single game. We may not be successful, but it's a hell of a lot better just expecting to lose due to polar bear sets and calling your team thugs when he meant to say slugs in that situation. Like, I think the Cavs are in a good place in terms of coaching, in terms of like their front office situation, because JB and Kobe are more or less linked to each other for the remainder of their contracts. I mean, either could get fired because Dan Gilbert, you know, is an interesting person to begin with in terms of running a team. But I think the Cavs are just transitioning to being like a bad team that's going to try their best. But, you know, with the flattened lottery odds, it kind of helps your chance there. And the fact that, like, you look at the Lakers, you look at the Grizzlies, you look at the Pelicans, they all vaulted the Cavs last year in the Zion sweepstakes and the John Morant sweepstakes. And, like, man, if the Cavs are in that situation and they jump up into the top three, awesome. But next year's draft class is so talented that I think Cleveland will still be picking in the top 10.
I would agree. And I'll just say this. I think the Cavs are a team that needs to stick to its process, stick to its timeline of sorts. There is no need to rush this. There's no need to try and do something you're not going to be. If you're being very realistic and you look at the Eastern Conference standings from this year, I don't really know who the team that is going to have a big drop-off is going to be. I mean, maybe the Raptors aren't quite as good, but them dropping like out of the playoffs would be kind of surprising to me. There's just not a team in that playoff picture. Maybe Orlando is the most likely one, but I don't think the Cavs going from maybe the worst team in the league to the 33-ish wins that they're going to need is really likely. I think what you're looking at is another kind of tough season. There's just a lot that I don't know how it all works, and I'm skeptical that some of the things will work. And again, you're playing really young players. Those guys are going to have growing pains. I think the Cavs the last 2 years have paid a lot of lip service to process and culture and all this stuff that are actual real things, and they're not just bullshit and marketing and whatever. I believe that they're real. They have never been an organization that is good at that. That is just a fact. They are not the Heat. They are not the Raptors. They are not the Pacers even. This is just not what the team does, and they are not the Lakers in the sense that like they will ultimately just get a start at some point and like have it work out, yada, yada, yada. Like, there's no inertia to what the Cavs are. I think this is a kind of a test here to like what the stability of this core organization kind of is. Evan, we're going to take, I think we got to take a quick break though. Any final thoughts, Jeff? Any final thoughts here on this topic?
My only thought is that I think sometimes when an organization says it's time to start winning, I wonder how much they mean we're not going to rest guys longer than they need or sit guys out and put up with some of the stuff that, you know, maybe Love was doing, some of that, the pouting, some of that kind of stuff. Yeah, I wonder if that just means we're going to start treating it serious more so than even make moves to try to win or do things on the court that fans
see. The test case for that is 100% Andre Drummond. It is not Kevin Love. Mm-hmm. Kevin Love, I think, will be in a better space this year. It's from my understanding of it and just kind of my read on it. I would be surprised if there's if we get another like Kevin Love like yelling at Kobe Altman and saying "Find me, I'm rich" quote, like then we're at another just bad timeline. But if Andre Drummond is like not giving a shit about the system and jacking up threes and not trying on defense and just doing the stuff that is like he was doing for most of the 8 games he's played with the team so far and like not buying into what JB's doing, and there's a lot of kind of tiptoeing around that, that is where this to me is like, okay, like what are we doing here? If he is not helpful in helping your empowering your young guys and buying into the system, then there's a whole bunch of problems to me. All right, we're going to take a quick break here, come back, and a couple more topics with Jeff Domina. All right, Jeff, what is next here?
So we were just talking about Drummond and how he's going to kind of be the test case for the team. I think fans have completely sold themselves on this idea that he is short-lived for Cleveland and likely to be dealt at the deadline. How much do you think the team buys into that? So how much do you think the team is looking to move on from him, A, and what are the odds that a deadline deal is something that they're looking for, or that that's a goal for the season, B, part of that question?
I'll take it real quick. Here's what I'll say. I think, number one, I think everyone is sort of open to the idea of like what the reality of the situation. I think there's just a lot of potential outcomes, and I think they'd both be lying to themselves if they both understood what they were, what the partnership sort of looks like based on everything that has happened, because they've played 8 games together. Andre was barely in Cleveland. He's been away. He has not been in the same city as anyone with the organizations, like for the most part, except for maybe like some dinners they had in the city for like months on months on months. Even if he knows some of the guys from playing against
the basketball.
Yeah. Well, I've saw him. He's taking like pull up threes on it, according to an Instagram video. So I'm just drinking bleach. But I think there's like a scenario where like he just like looks at 2021 and is like, okay, like this is kind of my bet, like the Cavs are maybe going to pay me a little more to stick around and like I can make this work, or they flip him and it all kind of goes on. And again, like he has not officially picked up his option. There's no indication, especially if you just want to read the social tea leaves, that like he is going to not pick up that option. It makes no financial sense for him to turn down that option. But I think there's just all options are kind of on the table, and I think it's telling that when you kind of read some of the smoke and poke around on Cavs draft stuff, they're not like out of the question on taking a center. And I think if that is your thought process, unless they're just dumb, which like, you know, I don't know, if the fact that they're like interested in Wiseman and Kobe Altman, according to some reporting, is interested in Yeka Okongwu, then, like, you know what? Like, the fact that that is on the table for them in this draft, when wing is such a pressing need and there are so many options there, that a center and a big is on the table for them, tells you, I think, a lot about what Drummond's future kind of could be.
Here is the best audio clip I could find to summarize the Cavs drafting a center and then extending Andre Drummond.
So much pain.
Like, that's what I feel in my soul, Patrick, in that regard, is that I do know for a fact that the Cavs have been exploring extension talks with Andre for a while now. I don't know 100% if they petered out. I get the impression they have, but at the same time, like, it's the Cavs are cryptic enough of an organization that I can't get a straight answer from them. And, like, if
there's
you talk
also
to
no his, incentive for them to do
yeah.
now. I'm just gonna
no,
say
there's
it.
No
there,
incentive.
There's no incentive for a player or team to, like, agree to anything like that for right now.
Yeah,
unless it's
for right
like,
now.
A max Giannis deal is, like, the only contract, I think, or, like, a rookie scale deal that's kind of locked in already is, like, the only kind of contract that you can kind of sign right now when
that's
the
fair.
Cap is just, like, who the fuck knows what's going on.
No, I wholeheartedly agree with you there. And it's just, I think, because Jeff asked us, do we, like, he said a lot of fans feel like Andre Drummond isn't long for Cleveland. I feel I'm in that boat where I don't believe Andre's long for Cleveland, but I do know he wants to be here for next season, because realistically, I'm just reading this as like a sound financial move, and just based on what I heard, like, he's not going to get $28.7 million on the open market this upcoming free agency, whatever it is. So you have to explore your options. Just, you know what, I'll cash this check now and explore free agency next year. Maybe that's the avenue he takes, and then that turns into Cleveland trading him. But I do know the Cavs are comfortable with off signing him to an extension if the price is right. And I have been told for a while now that price range is $15 million to $20 million annually, which isn't what Andre is 100% looking for. But I think Chris wrote about this a lot, and I've kind of expounded upon this too, where, like, he's trying his best to imitate Brook Lopez, but Brook Lopez is making a lot less with the Milwaukee Bucks right now, and that's kind of like the archetype of a center that can, you know, stick in today's NBA. And maybe because Andre is such, like, is a one-of-a-kind rebounder, maybe that elevates his value a little bit too, whatever. But I still don't think he's long for Cleveland. I think this was a experiment that kind of blew up in the Cavs' face because of circumstances they couldn't control with COVID, and the return results, I mean, the San Antonio game notwithstanding, just haven't really inspired a lot of confidence in me that Andre is a long-term piece. And at this point, like, Chris and I have explored if the Cavs did draft James Wiseman pre-lottery, and the Cavs, we were thinking the Cavs had a top three pick at this point, like, you trade Andre. But let's say Okongwu was on the table and Kobe just, you know, rules out everybody, because Chris Fedor was on the Chasedown show not too long ago, and he talked about how Okongwu is a Kobe Altman favorite. If the Cavs do take him, like, you try to trade Drummond immediately and just try to recoup as many assets as you can from it and just move on from the situation. But it's just, it's a weird thing. Like, I like DeAndre trading at this time. If I had more film to work off of, if I had more of a sample size to work with, I could firmly tell you, like, yeah, he's staying or no, he isn't. But just based on how little there is and the fact that he's not really trying his hardest to begin with, doesn't inspire a lot of inspiration. Like, Jeff, how do you feel about, like, do you want to keep Drummond? Do you want to be a competitive, or do you want the Cavs to more or less just follow a slow burn rebuild and hopefully they grab the quote unquote guy in these upcoming draft class?
I don't want Drummond around. I don't even think there's a contract number that makes me excited about keeping him around.
Jeff,
just in
Jeff,
terms of where we are.
Jeff,
in the rebuild.
You can't see me. I'm smiling because you are the first person. You are the first person, because even Evan's a little more, like, I don't think is, like, extreme on this. Like, if I'm like the AOC of the Biden thing, or of the debate here, Evan's the Joe Biden who's like, we're not getting rid of fracking. We're gonna, like, transition. And I'm just like, just pull the plug, Green New
Excuse
Deal.
Excuse me.
Just let me make the analogy. But I agree. Like, there's just not a financial number, unless he comes all the way down to something that he's just not going to take, that I'm into. There's just, like, like if I think about paying Andre Drummond $20 million, and I think also I just am like, why? Like, why are we doing this? There's no data in his entire career that he is like worth actual that much money. And I'm like someone who like I want big men to thrive. Like, I don't want to watch like every team become the Rockets or everything being small ball. Like, I love bigs. Nikola Jokic is like a top three player for me to watch in the NBA right now, and I love Bam, but like I Drummond
he's not like a fun big though.
No, especially when he's like loafing around
or Embiid or even like Capella or something. Like, he's not a fun style of a big man. Like, everything he wants to do, in theory he could be, but it's just not the way he plays, and I don't want to build a team around the way he plays at all.
Nope. All right, we got time for one more thing here. I'm not let Evan, you cannot talk about the analogy I made ever again. It just happened. You have to live with it.
I was just gonna ask you, like, are you team Tony Hawk or are you team Bam Margera? But clearly you're team Bam, so
no,
I respect
Hawk.
It.
I'm Tony Hawk.
Dude, Tony Ape's Hawk. Ape's gonna be so pissed that you said that, man. Anyways, go ahead.
Okay. Jeff, give us another question here.
So they're trying to make this Sexton Garland pairing work. And let's say Garland comes out and just isn't an NBA player. Let's say, last year wasn't about injury, whatever. He comes out and just isn't good. Is Sexton a two forever now? Is this just his game? Or do you think if something were to happen, they would shift him back to point guard? Or do you think long-term he'll come in and be, a backup one, is that six-man kind of role? Like, do you think he's a two now? Or is there still thoughts of him being a point guard long-term?
I think that's the worst-case scenario for the Cavs. If Darius Garland comes out next season, 6 months removed, maybe there's a little bit of rust, maybe there's still a continuity and continuation of him kind of looking mediocre. But I always have said, like, Chris and I have done a few deep dives on Darius now, like, if he is looking this subpar around what would be the equivalent of February, March of next season, God knowing how next season goes. I'm going to raise all alarms and all flags and say, like, oh, well, okay, the Cavs just picked the wrong guy at fifth overall in 2019. And, like, that's something to be concerned of. And I guess you bump Colin back to the one. And I'm still of the camp where he's best suited as a six man. And then I would like to believe that if Darius blows up in the Cavs' face and, like, he's just not an NBA player, maybe he is a backup point guard long term, and that's his career ceiling, which is incredibly disappointing for a fifth overall pick, and just terrible, like, optics from the Cavs overall in that pick. But, like, that's the worst case scenario for me. But, like, the silver lining is the Cavs are also going to probably be bad enough where hopefully Cade Cunningham is sitting right there, and I feel very comfortable in saying Cade Cunningham could be a point guard of the future for the Cavs if he was selected. And then, like, you bump Colin to two, you bump him to the sixth man. Like, that's what you do. But if Darius comes out looking as flat as he did the entire season next year like he did last year, yeah, the Cavs are in a lot worse of a situation than I hope they would be.
I agree with that, and I will just say that I do not know. I have such a hard time, like, fleshing all this out because, like, so many of the Cavs young players are just, like, quantifiably undefinable right now. Like, I feel like we don't know what Sexton exactly is. I feel like we don't know exactly what Garland is. We don't know what Kevin Porter Jr. is. We haven't seen Dylan Windler play an NBA minute yet. Like, we don't know what their rookie is going to be like. Like, we don't know who they're going to get in 2021, which is probably their next best chance to get, like, a high level player. That being said, when I think of Sexton, I think if you're looking at him as a lot, I think the best role for him is probably if he's like super lead high usage guy with bench units that can, like, spot up off ball and play with your starters. And probably is, like, if he can get there defensively and you're playing with, like, a certain kind of one, he could close as, like, a two. I'm a believer in, like, just the work ethic and his kind of drive to kind of get better on the defensive end. I kind of just believe that's going to raise him to a certain level. He can make shots. He's a good spot up shooter. Like, there's a lot to like. I think we just don't know so much, but I think the key point of this is, like, I think the bigger concern for me would just, like, regardless of what it means for Sexton, if Darius Garland is this bad in year one or in year two after his year one, and after you kind of give him a mulligan, maybe because of the situation with, kind of not playing that much and everything like that, then you're kind of you're really looking at a wasted pick at that point. 2 years in, if he's that bad, that's more concerning to me than like how do you figure out sex. Like I think the Cavs are still at a point, and they may not say this publicly, but I kind of think this is the hard truth of their situation. They're not at a point where like we need to be pegging this guy's into a situation. Like we're just not in that situation. What the situation where they're in is you need to get guys that are good, and then you just kind of figure it out as you go and kind of build whatever you're going to build. And I think Sexton is like a guy because for a lot of reasons. I think just whatever his position is, I think he's a guy that can play in the NBA and be on a good team. I'm in that camp on Colin Sexton. Do I know what he's going to get one on an extension in a year? I have no freaking clue what he's worth at an extension next year. And that is like a crazy thing that we already have to kind of think about that. But that's where we're at, but I think at the very least Sexton is like a good NBA rotation player who can be on a good team and be in a closing lineup, and I think, or at least has the potential to get there in time, and I think that is true. Whereas Darius, like, he could be trash next year, and then you're just like, okay, like, I don't know what we did with this pick.
Jeff, what about you?
The second question is super interesting in terms of what that contract's going to be, how committed the team's going to be long term in terms of building around him. You know, do they think of him as a foundational piece and would make draft selections and things like that based on him? Or is he just because he's perfect as a piece that you slot onto a decent team? Guy who can get a bunch of buckets, like you said, he doesn't hurt you with the shooting at all. He's a great shooter. He's got the length where you hope he can develop into a decent defender, even just an average defender. So he's a piece I think that could help a lot of teams. I think it's a weird spot for the Cavs where they don't have anything else. And so he's going to get prioritized in a way that scares me a little bit, both paid and prioritized in a way that scares me a little bit. And that's one of the biggest bummers about Garland being so bad last year. You know, I think we all probably like Garland, but he was pretty bad last year. And if he had come out and looked pretty good, you'd feel better about what Sexton could be down the road. But now it feels like he's going to kind of be slotted into a starting spot and paid a bunch of money. And I don't know what that's going to do to the Cavs long term. I think it's going to be kind of hard to build a team around that.
Do you have a number that would make you like squirm with Sexton? I don't even know. I have no idea.
I can't even fathom. I forget who it was the other day. Said something like, yeah, he's going to get, I think it was when Fedor was on the chase down, but he said, you know, he's going to get $100,000 or $100 million contract or something, and that seems crazy, but how many 21-year-olds score 20 points a game on league average efficiency with, you know, good shooting numbers? Those guys get paid, right?
Yeah, no, Sexton is a truly elite offensive player, but his deficiencies are so glaring that I don't know. The Cavs are a frugal enough organization. Maybe they'd lowball Colin into oblivion and not make
Kobe Altman has gotten these extremely team-friendly contracts of late.
They're all front-loaded, which is smart when the Cavs are in the doldrums, and then when they're actually trying to contend for the playoffs, they can figure out what they actually have, and these pieces are a hell of a lot more movable, but it's just, it's weird. I don't know what a number really is for Colin.
Here's what I'll say, Jeff, to kind of put a bow on this. The number that Collins camp is going to be negotiating off of in some capacity is whatever De'Aaron Fox gets from the Sacramento Kings.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to set some kind of template for Sexton. I think Fox is better, is a much better creator for others, has hit a higher ceiling than Sexton has so far. But if I'm Sexton's camp, that is the contract I'm probably looking at. And maybe Lonzo Ball kind of falls in this too, although he's likely not to get in the extension, but Fox is probably the extension that you're looking at and kind of wondering, like, okay, like let's work off of this. And that might be like a max or close to it. And that would put put a lot of pressure on the Cavs, to kind of figure that out. And that's a really weird thing to consider.
And with guys like Mitchell and Murray having big playoffs, and I think that's going to make people think giving guys huge contracts and letting them grow into them is more popular than if those guys had looked really bad. You know, I think a lot of people made fun of the Murray deal when it first happened, and now he's having this playoff run and it looks genius. And I wonder if that's going to impact things too, where guys said, listen, look at Murray. You know, he just had to grow into it.
Yeah, 100%. Jeff, I'm going to ask you one question on the way out of here. True or false, the Cleveland Cavaliers win more than 25 games next season? Just want a yes or a no. True or false?
True.
I think that's fair.
I agree. I actually think I agree, but I think it's like 26.
The awkward pause was really great on our part, Chris.
Hey, you know what?
Yeah, like, what did I do? Did I cut out?
No, I'm just awkward. I'm an awkward person. I'm an awkward host. But Jeff, it's been a pleasure. We're glad to have you on. You can come on literally anytime. You don't berate me you don't berate me on Twitter like Kendon does. Hi, Kendon. And you know what? You're just a very pleasant member of the Cavs Twitter community, and I just want to say thanks for being that, and thanks for coming on and chatting with us and really just, you know, gearing us through a whole entire show.
I appreciate you guys talking Cavs every day, because I talk about this with Kendon and with Mike Schreiner, that there's like five of us that still talk about the Cavs every single day, and it just has to annoy the crap out of the rest of our timeline, because there's just nothing new or different or interesting happening, and we still somehow do it every single day. So
God bless,
I appreciate you guys keeping that up.
Mike Schreiner, if you're listening, my former colleague way back in the day at Write the Euclid, really good guy, and salute to him. Salute to him. Evan, send us out.
As always, wear a mask, practice social distancing, register to vote, and go Cavs.